Welcome to Woman Today, a magazine program designed to encourage and equip women today for a better tomorrow together. Hi there, my name is Larice Faree and I serve as a presenter at GNCR in KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa. I believe that we do life and faith better together. So today I'm excited to introduce author Hannah Schermerhorn. When Hannah was studying engineering and engaged to be married in her final year of college, she would have never guessed that 7 years down the line, she would be writing a book on singleness. But God has a sense of humor. Today, Hannah shares how God taught her contentment in a season of singleness that she never wanted, and helps us to see that knowing God is more than enough for our satisfaction. So Hannah, thank you once again for your time. And I really want to ask if you would just start us off by sharing some of your singleness story, and specifically how you ended up in a prolonged season of singleness when you were actually planning to be, you know, done and dusted with singleness, you were engaged. So if you could just introduce the listeners to a bit of your story.
Yeah, so I went to college, and I think I was someone who was like, oh, you meet someone in college and you get married, because that's what family members did and friends did and all those kind of things. So I went to college and I met someone. We dated for all of college. And then when we were getting close to the end of college, we were ready to take the next step and get engaged and get married. So we planned our whole lives, what we wanted to do, you know, when we wanted to get married, where we wanted to live, all those kind of things. And then we were planning the wedding, and just a few months before we were supposed to get married, I found out that my fiance had some pretty bad addiction problems that were going on. It was something I was aware of earlier, but I thought it was kind of done and things like that. But then suddenly he told me just how bad things were. And I realized that the marriage that I thought I was going to go into was going to be very, very different if I went into it than what I had expected. So we wrestled for a long time with what to do. And as the stress of trying to figure out, you know, how do we continue this relationship? Do we continue into marriage? All those things, the addiction just kind of got worse and worse from that stress, and reached a point where my fiance told me that there was nothing wrong with what he was doing, and that it was my fault that I was reacting how I was and things like that. So it was really, really hard for me, but I realized that I couldn't continue and go into marriage in this relationship. Really wrestled with that for a number of months, but thankfully God made it obvious for me of, nope, this isn't what I should be doing anymore. So we were just a few months away from when we were supposed to. I never expected to be single again. I really, really struggled. And in the beginning, it was just struggling with, you know, God, why do you have me here? This is not what I ever hoped or dreamed for. I always wanted to grow up and get married and live happily ever after, as they say. So why am I here? And I struggled with just loneliness and depression, did a lot of counseling, things like that. So the first few years were pretty tough of being single. And I thought, you know, okay, this relationship didn't work out, but maybe I'll just start dating again and find someone, and then it'll be totally fine. It'll be like, this is why this all happened. But as year after year went by, I didn't find anyone. I kept on being single. But as the years progressed, I went from being really upset and frustrated with singleness to one day, about probably 5 years after I broke off the engagement, realizing that I was super, super happy where I was, and nothing had changed. I was still single. My relationship status hadn't changed, but I'd gone from being really upset with singleness to all of a sudden just loving what my life was exactly where it was. So when I got into that whole phase, I started meeting people who were struggling with the things that I had struggled with loneliness and just wondering what God has planned, you know, for us in singleness and all those kind of things. And I started sharing what I learned, and people were resonating with it. So it took me a long time. I had the idea of, oh, I should write a book about all these things I learned. And it took a lot of nudging and a lot of time to be convinced of, yeah, this is what I should be doing. But then I put together basically everything that I struggled with, everything that was still a current struggle, struggle? And then what does that look like when I read the Bible in that context? Mm-hmm. And what does God have for me in the season of singleness and what I'm supposed to be doing with it? So that's how I wrote my book, A Single Life to Live, after really, really struggling with singleness, but then finding just so much of God's goodness in it as well.
Mm. And it's so encouraging, just the fact that you were able to come to a point of contentment in your singleness, you know, still having some struggles and difficulties, but almost like you came out of a very deep place of sadness over singleness, and somehow you were able to make peace with the fact that that was the season that God had you in at that moment. And that's why I'm so grateful that you can share this message also through your book and with our listeners, because I don't believe that singleness is a curse. And I don't believe that it's something that has to, you know, sort of be the dark cloud hanging over the rest of your life. You know, even in singleness, you can find that peace and contentment, as is exemplified in your story. Hannah, can I ask, how did your relationship status impact the way that you viewed yourself? Because obviously, going from thinking that you were going to have this, you know, happily ever after ending with this guy and sort of planning your whole life around that, and then suddenly going to having lost your significant other, and then obviously the loss of all the things that you planned to do together with your life, how did that reflect on your own self-image?
Yeah, it's a good thing it all happened, because I realized that I basically had most of my identity in being in that relationship. And I hadn't realized how much of myself I viewed through the lens of that relationship. So I thought, you know, that I was important and I was loved and I was chosen because someone had chosen to love me and wanted to marry me and things like that. And I thought, you know, that means that I have cool plans for my future of all these great, you know, things we're seeing on social media of like these beautiful weddings and all this like family stuff that's so cool. So I thought, this relationship makes me important. This is why I matter. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how much I was putting that on myself until I lost it. So I struggled so much, but it was the thing I needed, because it really showed me that I was putting my identity in the wrong thing. Like, I thought I was important because of a relationship status, mm-hmm. which is now such a silly thing that I think about it. But instead of thinking, oh, I matter because God loves me, that's the real reason I matter. And it's not because of anything I do. It's not because of a relationship status. It's nothing like that. It's just God, who is so powerful and so amazing, cares about me. That's mm-hmm. what my identity is. And whether I'm in a relationship or whether I'm single, that doesn't matter. That's still true. So I really, really struggled, because so much of who I was finding that relationship, you know, dreaming about finding the perfect guy, getting into that relationship and moving forward. But then when that was taken away from me, it really challenged me to see, why am I thinking about myself this way? Why, you know, have I gotten to such a dark place because of this? And it showed me my foundation was in the wrong mm-hmm. thing, and it should have been in God, and God loving me and caring about me. And once I changed that to view myself that way, then that was such a game changer for me in singleness.
Mm. How did you make that shift? What was it that slowly introduced the idea to you that maybe your identity is found in God rather than maybe your circumstances?
Yeah, it took me a while. And, you know, I was a Christian going through the whole thing. But I think that as I went through all these struggles, as, you know, I've been a Christian since I was very small, since, you know, my parents raised me in the Christian faith, but I never was really challenged in my faith that way. So I think going through all this kind of took out all these foundations I'd put myself in. And it took me years to realize that, you know, my identity should be in this. And it started really in a sermon at church where my pastor talked about identity and saying, you know, what are you putting your identity in? And he was like, whoa, this is blowing my mind. I'm putting my identity in all these things I shouldn't be, whether it's a relationship or a career or, you know, accomplishments, things like that. So I think the very first time I heard this concept was in church in a sermon. And I went home and I was like, what? wow, like this is the practical thing that I am doing that is wrong. And as that was in my mind, I just saw every single day how I was doing it. And it took a long time for me to start thinking about it, you know, in a different way. Cause it's like, oh, I'm putting my identity in this, but I've been doing that for years. So how do I change this? So I think it just kept on being going back to God's word, you know, every day. In Bible studies and, you know, reading God's word, thinking about, okay, God is talking to me today and he cares about me today in the exact situation I'm in. He loves me. And that's why he has me here in singleness. And I can trust in him. I can be content in that because he has me here. And no matter what situation I'm in, no matter what my circumstances are, God loves me and he cares about me. So I can trust in that. And once I started doing that, the weight was taken off of me so much of, you know, trying to get out there and find the right person and thinking that I control that and have to be in charge of it, to realizing, no, I can trust God. And it's ultimately not up to me to make something happen. It's up to God and his timing, if and when that's going to happen. So I think as I slowly started to shed those wrong identities and relationships, I just had so much more peace and I could just relax and take a deep breath. And as that happened, it's like, okay, I need to continue to do this and remind myself of this because life is so much easier and so much better when I do it.
What's really interesting about that for me is how when you find your identity in your circumstances, that's so unstable. And it's actually such a blessing that you had this realization before you got married, you know, that you lost sort of the engagement and then God used that to jostle you through a series of events into starting to question, you know, where am I finding my identity? Because I think if that's not settled, if you entered into marriage with that mentality that your identity would be, you know, found there, the moment that anything starts going rocky, you know, in that marriage relationship, you start to question your value, you start to question the worth that you have. And it's interesting how we can use our performance, whether that's in a relationship or in a career, sort of to try and also earn God's love. Whereas what you're saying here is that God's love is the foundation of your identity and you live out of that place instead of trying to work for God's love through this performance. So it's so awesome that God taught you that lesson.
Yeah, exactly. It's very interesting because I feel like it forced me to change so much. And whether that was, you know, for years of being single or being married, if I would have gone into a marriage thinking, yeah, this is why I matter, then that's so much pressure on a spouse also of, oh, you've got to be this good too, because this is what my expectation is. So I'm so thankful I learned that lesson just for future relationships and just for, you know, being single too, because it changed how I treated other people and it changed my approach to dating too, of like, you know, the reason that I would get married, you know, or be in a relationship is because I want to love that person and care about them the way that, you know, Jesus has shown me to love, rather than trying to change someone or, you know, trying to fit them into my perfect idea of what my life should be. So yeah, that was such a helpful lesson to learn for me.
One of the other aspects of singleness that can be very difficult to navigate, I think, is loneliness. And you also touch on it in the book. And I love the biblical example that you use of somebody in scripture who also experienced this deep sense of loneliness in a period of singleness. Could you unpack some of that for the listeners and then help us to navigate how can we learn from that character and then learn to overcome loneliness in whichever season of life we are?
Yeah, so Jeremiah to me was just such an incredible example of navigating loneliness. And it's funny because I'd read about Jeremiah, but it's not until I thought about, hey, how does this apply to my single life, that I just got so much out of Jeremiah when it comes to loneliness. So Jeremiah was called to preach to the people that, you know, they're sinning and they need to repent and they needed to turn to God. But as a result of that being what he was supposed to do, people just hated him. They did not want to hear the message that he was preaching. So throughout the book of Jeremiah, just so many horrifyingly lonely things happen to him. Like his hometown tries to kill him. He's put into solitary confinement. At one point, he's like put into a cistern to just sink into the mud and die by himself. And people just constantly are rejecting him and pushing him off and things like that. But despite that happening, Jeremiah in the book of Jeremiah is still able to say, but the Lord is with me like a mighty warrior. And he's able to persist in saying this message. And I'm like, if Jeremiah can go through all of those things and still be able to be confident that he is not alone, then I should be able to go through singleness and know that I'm not alone as well. So I started looking into what Jeremiah did. And he has just this really honest dialogue with God where he says things like, you know, why was I even born? It would have been better if I wasn't, so I didn't have to face all this stuff. And God sometimes answers him, God sometimes doesn't, but he really works through all of those really difficult feelings and emotions that he faces instead of trying to just cover them up and, you know, trying to hide them or not confront them. So what I learned from the book of Jeremiah is that we should also take our very raw and real feelings to God. He already knows them. So why not actually talk to him and pray to him about them? So what I think is a great way to do this is just by writing down, here's everything that makes me feel lonely, or even, you know, here's everything I'm struggling with. And then a lot of times what I find is we believe a lie that causes us to think the negative things around this. So with loneliness, you know, we think people don't care about us. No one is there for me, especially in singleness. It's like, I don't have someone, but maybe I feel like all my friends are with significant others. And, you know, it's a Friday night, I have no plans, and everyone's just with their husband or their boyfriend, things like that. So I think it's good to write down every single fear we feel, every single negative thought, and then see what lie might be behind that. So even just the thought of, you know, I am all alone, there's a lot of lies that are surrounding it. It's like, for me, no, I have a family, I have friends, I have a church community, I have all of these great things. And most importantly, I have God with me every single moment of the day. And he knows all the thoughts I have. He knows what's going to happen to me. He died for me, all these amazing things. So thinking, oh, I feel so bad for myself because I'm alone, is not true at all. So I like to write down, you know, the fear of the lie, and then identify what that lie is, what that thing that isn't true that I'm believing is, and then kind of put a Bible passage to that. So like with Jeremiah, the Lord is with me like a mighty warrior. And then I can go back to that fear of that lie of, oh, I'm alone, I feel so sad for myself. And it's like, no, God's with me, and he's given me so much more than that. So I kind of worked through each of those things on my own. And then I also in the book have this extra category of, I'm not Jeremiah, so I can be very happy with my life. And in that one, I'm just like, oh, well, Jeremiah went through all these really bad things, and I'm not even close to that. So I can be even more content and more happy with the place that God has put me in. But I think I literally a lot of times have to write down every single thing I'm thinking, and then kind of be like, okay, God, help me work through all of these. And then every time one comes to my brain, I can just work through that pattern again of like, okay, this is what I'm feeling, this is what the lie is, this is what God says, and this is what the truth is. And the more I do that over and over, it kind of helps to eliminate those, so that every time my brain wants to think it, it's like, nope, this is the truth. Like, you don't need to believe it, and go down into that spiral. So Jeremiah was just such a great example of a single person in the Bible, because God told him to actually stay single because the world was just so crazy at the time. And I learned a lot from him.
Something I really appreciate about your book is how practical it is, that it's not just theoretical, but that you lay out these steps to help people work through their emotions and fears and the lies that they believe. That's so beneficial, because I think one of the biggest difficulties of singleness is that you just have this jumble of emotions and hurts. And, you know, it's just telling someone that God loves you, you know, it's true, but you help us sort of to unpack those fears, to pull them apart so that the truth can actually penetrate deeper. So it's not just that you give a gospel passage, but you acknowledge that difficulty and then help us to identify that there might be some fears or some lies that we're believing behind that. And then I've really found that when we dig deep into the truth also pierces deeply into your heart and manages to stay with you. So that's really something I really just appreciate about every chapter of your book, that you have many practical to-dos that you challenge people to engage in so that they don't just listen and take in, but actually work through what they're going through at that moment. So one of the things you talk about as well is waiting in the book, which is obviously a common thing in singleness. Singleness can sometimes feel like a limbo because it's like you don't know if you might ever leave this season, but there's no certainty in singleness. You might leave the season of singleness. You might just be here forever. So it's like this waiting room where you just don't know when your name is going to be called or if your name is going to be called. So what do you think are some of the challenges of waiting in that season, and how can that negatively impact our emotional stability as singles?
Yeah, I think that it's very easy to compare yourself to others in waiting. So in the whole analogy of feeling like you're in a waiting room, I know for me that it was very much like, okay, I'm sitting in this waiting room, and then friends are dating and they're not in the waiting room, and then they become single and they join me in the waiting room, and then all of a sudden they start dating someone and they move out of the singles waiting room and they get married, and I'm like, hey, I've been here longer than you, but you got out of here before me? This isn't fair. So I think for me, one of the really big struggles was just comparison, and whether that's friends or family or even, you know, just seeing things online, you're like, I'm this age, I should be married, all these other people are married and things like that. So I think it's very easy to have jealousy or comparison, things like that. But it's also very easy to look at yourself and go, what am I doing wrong? And think about, you know, is there something that I missed? Should I have changed something either in my past or in a past relationship, things like that. And I think it's very easy to become self-critical in those areas too, because you're like, how come everyone else is doing this? Did I do something wrong? But you know, the truth is, yeah, sometimes there's some practical things you might need to change if you're dating or things like that. But in general, God probably has you there for a reason. And it's not because, you know, you should have tried harder in a past relationship or you should be doing something different. It's maybe because God has you here for a reason and for a season of, you know, something that you don't expect or something that's going to go differently than you planned. But it's because God loves you that you're there. And I think that's something that's really hard to wrestle with, because it's so easy to look at others or look at yourself rather than just looking at God in that waiting room.
What do you think you would have missed out on, maybe in your relationship with God or even, you know, your understanding of yourself, if you had immediately jumped into that marriage? What do you think you would have missed that you benefited from this period of waiting in your life?
Yeah, I think that I never had to trust God so much as I did in singleness. That was the biggest test of trusting God. And it's like, yep, from, you know, the time I was little, it's like, Jesus loves me, I know this, I believe in God, I'm excited about God, all the things. But this was the first time that my faith was really tested of, you're in a place, things didn't work out the way you wanted. So either you can be angry, you can be upset, or you can trust in God in this scenario and see what he's going to do in this, because he promises that he's going to work everything out for our good. And that might not be in the way that I expected or wanted it to be, as was the case at the time. But for me, it just very incredibly grew my awe of God in a way that I did not have before, and showed me that I can trust God in a scenario and I can always trust God in the future. So for me, God allowed my relationship to be, you know, broken off, and it didn't happen the way I wanted. But in that time of me being single, he just did so much and just blew my mind in what was going on, because I did not ever plan on writing a book. I went to school for electrical engineering and it was not on my radar to write or anything like that. But, you know, I had this idea, and then it just became louder and louder in my mind through these different scenarios that I was in and people I talked to. And then all of a sudden I wrote a book, and God just opened door after door to get it published published and to come out and things like that. And it's something I am not qualified to do. I did not get an English degree. I'm not like the best fancy writer, things like that. I'm just like, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But because God allowed me to stay single and he didn't answer my prayers to mend my relationship or get me out of singleness, he brought something that was so much bigger. He gave me this purpose of something to do where I could help other people and see God's love in singleness. And that's something I wouldn't have had if I would have just gotten married. So God just like made this huge opportunity for me and had these great plans for me that I could have never imagined. I would have had a totally different life. I would have lived somewhere else, worked somewhere else, done all these different things. But because God said no to me, all of these things happened, which were so cool. And that doesn't always happen right away. Like, I mean, I saw a turnover in like 5 years of that happening. Sometimes I feel like it can be a lifetime, or maybe we'll die and God will be like, this is why I had that happen. And you're like, oh, cool. Thank you. Now I finally understand. But for me, it was just such a huge blessing that God in that shortish time showed, yeah, I said no to you here, but this is why so clearly. So now as I move into anything else in my life, no matter what I'm facing, it's like, okay, instead of me being this person who typically before all this happened was a planner and was like, this is what's got to happen this year, and then this has to happen, and then I'm going to do this and this and this. Instead of that, I can just step back and be like, okay, like this is what I'm generally thinking of doing, but if it doesn't work out, it's okay, because God has plans for me and what he wants for my life is way better and way cooler than anything I could even come up with. So it's okay for me to sit back and let God just take control and kind of be like, okay, here's what I'm generally thinking. And if God is like, nope, it's going to be this, that's totally fine. So for me, it took me from someone who was very controlling of my life and here's the plan, it has to go according to plan, to someone who's like, no matter what happens, God can work in it. Whether it's the thing I want or it's the thing I don't want, God can really do some amazing things in it. So I can just trust him. And a lot of times I'd rather have him just tell me what to do, which he doesn't do. But it's okay, because no matter what I choose, if it's not clear, like God can work in that. He can change things. So yeah, my trust in God just got so much bigger and so much better because of these bad situations, which was really, really great.
I think that is so awesome. And what I also realized through reading your book, all the practical issues that you touch on, loneliness, identity, that difficulty in the waiting period, you know, you keep drawing it back to God. And obviously, that's the solution in it all. But I think really that aspect of trusting God is what can make or break whatever kind of suffering that you're going through. It's what can either enable you to come out on the other side a stronger person or cause you to be crippled. I really think that if we can trust God in that season of our life, if we can trust on that truth that he does love us, that that's our identity, you know, we can walk through it with faith. We can walk through it actually noticing the blessings. But I think the moment that our faith in God is crippled, we're immediately turning to sort of blaming God and just being angry at him and, you know, growing cold. So that's such an awesome position to put your heart in, a place of faith, to notice God's faithfulness to you. I've recently heard Paula Marsteller, who also wrote that God has only three answers to prayer. So he either says yes, he says later, or he says, I've got something way better. And I think that's so awesome, because it really encapsulates what happened in your situation, where he had something way better in store for you.
Yes, exactly. And I feel like as I move forward in life too, it's just such a good reminder to look back at that and think like, okay, God worked this thing out that I thought would never be worked out and would never be, you know, good or a positive thing in my life. And now it's become such an amazing thing in my life. Like, so anything I face in the future now, and in the Bible, they have the concept of Ebenezer, where the Israelites put up the stone and it was just as God has gotten us through the past, so he'll continue to get us through the future. Like, this whole experience is really an Ebenezer for me of God's gotten me through that and just did such great things with that. So no matter what I'm facing now, God can do it. It's like everything seems very small now that I know what God can do. So yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah, if he opened the Red Sea once, he can do it again.
Yes.
Hannah, I want to ask you, so we've touched on a few very practical aspects of singleness and the struggle of singleness, but I want to talk a bit about the perception of marriage and singleness. What do you think in your situation was the biggest example of marriage that sort of set your expectations up for what it would look like in your own life?
Yeah, I've tried to think through like what one thing is. I know like Disney movies really influenced me of like you go on this adventure, you meet the person and you live happily ever after and they're just like presented there. But I think a lot of just movies, books I've read, things like that, that kind of have this like ending and the end goal is to be married. And then it doesn't really get into the hardships of marriage or the work of marriage or the practicality of what marriage is. It's just like, oh, here's the happy ending is the literal marriage is what it is, the wedding. So I think that really influenced me to think like, this is the thing that I'm supposed to be working for. This is the life milestone that says I've made it and I've done the things that I'm supposed to do. So I think, yeah, all of those influences and just a lot of friends and family getting married and things like that. And me not just, thinking like, this is what you're supposed to do in your life. And as a Christian, and a lot of times in the Christian church, there can be a push for marriage too, which is a very like for a good reason. But sometimes it can make you feel like, oh, what's wrong with me if I'm not? So I think I just had all these kind of different influences that made me feel like this is what you're supposed to be doing and kind of ignoring that God in the Bible says like it's good for people to remain single also. That whole outside voice was able to get a little too loud for me to ignore that. Nope, both marriage and singleness are equal in God's eyes. He loves both of them. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the lies that really make your journey of singleness way more difficult than it needs to be is the lie that you can't be happy until you're married. So like that just increases the loneliness. Yes. It cripples your sense of identity. It really makes the waiting agony. When you get to that place where you believe society's lie that marriage is the key to happiness. And in the book, you bring a balanced perspective of both marriage and singleness. So would you mind unpacking some of that and just talking about maybe why realistically marriage is not the key to your eternal happiness? And then how singleness can be a blessing. You know, you have touched on that verse that says, singleness is a gift. It's often a gift people would like to return. So could you help us to change our perception on that?
Yes, yeah, for sure. So I think it's very easy to just make marriage an idol, especially based off of all these voices around us and pop culture and things like that that do that. But the reality of marriage, which something that was a huge blessing for me when I was writing this book too, was I had friends who were married that I was super close to, and they were very willing to be honest with me about what marriage is, which I don't think is always the case. And yeah, there's reasons that you might not want to tell someone else outside of your marriage, like what's going on. But I was just very appreciative of the fact that it's like, no, like we're fighting, I'm crying, there's frustrations, like every day you wake up. And marriage, if you're getting married, what you're trying to do is saying that I care more about this other person than myself. I'm going to put them ahead of me every single moment of the day. And both people should be trying to do that. And sure, that sounds great, all these cool things that come with marriage, but practically doing that when you're hungry and you're tired and you're frustrated and work's not going well is a really, really hard thing to do. And then you add baggage from the past, all of these things. And marriage is super, super hard. It takes so much work on both people's parts to make, a marriage that's consistently good, but still there's always going to be fighting because of sin. So I think people just being honest with me, and that happened both when I broke off the engagement and was kind of debating on what to do, people came to me and were like, hey, we've dealt with similar things and we're married and this is what you'd be looking at if you move forward with that. And then also just being single and people are like, you can just like fly somewhere if you want. You can just like watch a movie at night. You don't have to like ask people what's happening. You can just like do what you want, which is really, really nice. And I agree. So I think to really try to take off, like, why do I idolize marriage? And is it just like, oh, I think I'm going to have this emotional high constantly? Because that's not true. Like, marriage can't do that. The other person's not perfect. You're not perfect. So that's not real. So I think trying to just have a healthy view of marriage, of like, it's going to be just as much of a struggle being married as it is single. And the issues I have in singleness are going to also be my issues in marriage. I think a lot of times it's easy to think like marriage is going to fix things and make things better and I'll feel better about this, or like I'll try to start my life in marriage. But no, whatever you're dealing with before really only gets amplified in marriage. And I've like found that from everyone I've talked to. So I think that makes it a little easier to level the playing field of, okay, singleness and marriage both have their struggles, both have their issues. God appreciates both of them. God loves both of them. He has them for reasons, and he cares about us, so he knows what's best for us of which one we're in right now. But then just thinking and seeing how much of a blessing that singleness can be has been really, really cool. So we have that passage on the gift of singleness, which was a huge struggle for me too, because it's like, no, yeah, I don't want this gift. Why do I have this gift? But one of the blessings I saw that was really, really cool outside of, you know, God just increasing my trust in him and making it a time where I can just study the word and get into believing in him so much was really cool. But what I found was neat was the fact that we live in a world where people think that you need to be married to be happy. So when I was single and talking to people about, like, you know, at work or maybe I was traveling or something, and people are like, oh, do you have a boyfriend? Are you married? And I'd be like, no, I'm single. And I would be happy. And I would just be like, no, I'm good. And they'd be like, oh, I want to set you up and things like that. And it's just like, no, like, I'm fine. I didn't need someone. And people saw that, and they saw that I was happy, and they started asking, like, how are you so happy if you're single? And it was confusing to them, because I think it's such a good example of how we are Christians. It's we don't have something that the world thinks we need to be happy, yet we are still happy because we have God. I think it's just such a cool testament of what God can do in our lives, and just such a clear picture of, like, yeah, society thinks this is what you need. We don't have it. We have God, and we're doing so great. So it makes people start to question. I had numerous people just like asking me, well, I'm married and I'm not happy. You're single and you're happy and you don't have anyone. And they just like ask me all these questions. And it's like, no, I'm good. Like, God has me here. It's cool. Like, I'm loving my life. It's great. And like, it just floored people. And then to the extent too of, like, you know, following the Bible and being like, I'm not going to be involved in, you know, sinning, especially in singleness, of hooking up with people and all of that culture. That's a huge testament too of, wait, like, you're not doing any of that. Again, how are you happy? And you're not doing any of these things that we all think you need to be happy. So I think a huge gift of singleness, when Paul talks about that, when that's in the Bible, is the fact that it is such a great way to let our light shine and show that I'm a Christian and this is what I can do in my Christian life and this is what God is doing in my Christian life. And singleness is just such a gift to give our testimony on that.
That's so awesome. Turning singleness into an opportunity to honor God and to sort of be a platform for the gospel. That's an amazing perspective, because I know that we do have that perspective of marriage, which is a good and right and beautiful perspective of marriage being a picture of the gospel. And I would ask if you could unpack some of that as well. But to really see singleness in the same light, to see singleness as being for the Lord, that is not the narrative that we are often exposed to, as you mentioned. And sadly, I think not just by secular society, but even in the church, because we want to exalt marriage, because it is, you know, a God-ordained, beautiful institution, sometimes it can seem that marriage is a better ministry opportunity than singleness. So that's just an awesome perspective that you bring in there. But could you point us to some of the ways that we might be longing for marriage, because marriage itself actually points to a greater reality?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of my favorite pictures of this is with communion. And I was at a 10th Avenue North concert once, and they talked about this, and it just was so cool to hear. But he described it as that at the time that Jesus instituted communion, someone would propose by offering someone a glass of wine. And that was a man proposing to the woman. And if she took the glass of wine, they were going to get married. So they were engaged then, and he would go to his parents' house, and he would work on building up extra rooms so that he could eventually bring his bride back to this mansion that he's building up. So it's just such a picture of Jesus. So at the time that Jesus was doing communion, when he gave his disciples that glass of wine, they were probably like, are you proposing to us? Like, what's going on? Because that culturally was the thing at the time. So, you know, and then having that whole analogy of Jesus is choosing you, and we have to wait here on earth for a while, but we're waiting because he's, you know, building up the mansion in heaven that we're going to go to eventually. And in the time historically too, when they had built up the house, they'd come back with a parade. The girl, you know, would be waiting for the guy, and there'd be trumpets. There'd be the celebration when the groom would come back to meet the bride, and then they'd be able to get married and then go to the place that was built up. Like, such a crazy analogy that was going on at the time. So with us too, it's the same thing of Jesus is choosing us. He's always, you know, will you be mine? Will you be mine? I'm here for you. I'll do everything for you. And we're in this relationship with Jesus, which is like marriage of, you know, he's going and he's in heaven and, you know, getting things ready for us and stuff. And he will come back and he will take us to be with him forever. But in the meantime, like, that's such a cool, like, whoa, that's going to happen. But in the meantime, we're here and we're like, okay, what do I do? How do I, again, just wait through all this and do things like that? But I think marriage is pointing us to all those good things that Jesus has for us. So there's that constant relationship where someone cares about what is going on in your life every moment, what you're experiencing, the highs and the lows, being with you through all that, working through everything with you. And not being in a marriage, it's easy to be like, no one cares about these things. But no, marriage is pointing us to the fact that God cares about all of those things for us in every second and everything that we're experiencing. So I think that's really cool. But even more importantly is that God, you know, with us is a perfect relationship, and any human marriage we have is going to fall short. So no matter what, if you get married, like, you're going to fail your spouse, your spouse is going to fail you. There's going to be sin. There's going to be all of these things that happen, and you can't do anything about it because we're sinful. That's what happens. But with God, none of that is happening. It's a perfect relationship where no matter how much we miss the mark, no matter how much we fail, God will always take us back and love us and wants to be with us forever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like a cool way to reframe a view on marriage when you're single, is not, oh, I feel really sad that I don't have it. It's more, this is a picture of what I do have and what I'm going to have forever in heaven. I think that really helps to, instead of, you know, going to a wedding for how many times alone, you're like, when is it going to be my turn? It's like, no, this is a celebration of what I have right now with God and what's going to continue happening with me and God. So I think that can be a really beautiful way to look at it.
Sometimes I found an analogy of this situation is that it's almost like somebody has a picture of a sunset up on the wall in their room, you know, and they really adore the picture of the sunset. And it's good and it's right for us to appreciate the beauty that's represented in that image. But it becomes problematic when somebody invites you, like, hey, let's go out and see an actual sunset. And you're like, no, I'll stay here by my picture. I'm just going to keep, you know, checking out this picture. But somebody's inviting you to an actual, you know, to go to the beach to see the sun setting over the beach. And I find that as an analogy for this single season, whereby we have these beautiful pictures around us of maybe the successful marriages of our friends, and we can long for that. But Jesus, you know, God is calling us out to see the actual sunset, you know, to experience the reality that that image is pointing to, which is that intimacy with himself. And I find that for my own heart, that is such a comfort while you're in this season of singleness, to know that I might never participate in that image. You know, God might not choose me to specifically portray that aspect of the gospel, but I don't have to miss out on the eternal reality that it's pointing to. And that's such a comfort.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's such a good analogy. That's beautiful.
But what I also find interesting is that singleness gives us an opportunity to portray the aspect of our relationship with God where we are waiting and sort of where we are preparing ourselves. Because what I hear is that singleness really gives us that opportunity, as it did for you, to work through some deep emotional things, to sort of prepare your heart to get yourself ready for whatever it was that God did eventually bring into your life. And it's the same, you know, in that picture of the gospel, whereby the church at large is waiting on our groom to come. But this is our opportunity to prepare ourselves, you know, for when we're going to be united with him eventually. So it really is awesome to know that your relationship status doesn't impact, or can I say limit, your ability to reflect the gospel. Because I think for Christians, single Christians who really want to glorify God in all of their life, you know, it can become sad if you see marriage as a better ministry than singleness. So I also love that you bring that aspect into your book. Can we touch on you in this section where you discuss a more balanced view on singleness and marriage? You do bring it back to some practical ways that as singles, we can sort of take stock of what we think marriage is going to satisfy and see how maybe we can trust God to satisfy those desires in our heart. Can you walk us through those practical steps?
Yeah, so this came out of something my cousin did. So she used to have like silly reasons for getting married, essentially, like shallow reasons for getting married. That's what it was. And it was things like, I want someone to fix my car so I don't have to deal with it. Or I don't know, like I want someone to do taxes because I don't want to do it. And just like silly, shallow reasons for getting married that aren't actually a thing and all that. So I did that too with my shallow reasons. Mine were more like, I want someone to kill spiders because I'm terrified of spiders. I'm very short, so I want someone to reach things in high places, all of those kind of things. But then I did a realistic version of that, of, okay, what am I actually practically looking for in marriage? Because am I just, yeah, chasing this happily ever after feeling that I think will come? Or are there practical things that I'm looking for in marriage and that's why I'm longing for it? So I tried to make my list of what I was looking for. And it was different things like companionship, you know, having someone to talk to every day, things like that. And more of the practical actual reasons of wanting to get married, just having someone there in case something bad happens, stuff like that. So I, again, I'm very much a write it all out kind of person. So I wrote out all of those. And then I tried to think through, what has God provided for me that has helped to satisfy those things right now? So that maybe if I feel really pulled to like, oh, I need someone to talk to every day and that's why I want to get married, what do I have available to me right now that might make that desire a little less intense so that it's not just overwhelming me and convincing me to think, oh, marriage is the thing that has to absolutely solve that. So for me, like, first I went through my shallow list and it was like killing spiders, and I got a cat that suddenly kills spiders for me. So yay, that one's satisfied. And he's also a space heater at night, so that's also nice. But I went through my more realistic ones of like, you know, I want companionship. And realistically thinking about that, it's like, well, God has provided all these different communities for me. So I've got like my small group Bible study where I can text those people anytime. I can call them. I have really great friends from my small group that would call me and be like, hey, how'd your presentation at work go? Mm-hmm. And, you know, ask those questions that were super, super nice for a single person of like, yeah, these people care. And outside of that, I had a really caring family and, you know, other friends from different seasons of life and things like that. And maybe I felt like, you know, they weren't exactly where they need to be, but I could invest more in those relationships and make it so that it's more of a like, we're going to check in all the time, we're going to talk all the time. So I have someone that is at that level of companionship that I'm looking for. So I really encourage people in that chapter to make your list maybe first of shallow reasons, just because it's fun, it's a good creative exercise, and then realistic reasons that you want to get married. And there's definitely, you know, some challenges and things like that, like, you know, physical intimacy and things like that. That is a whole very challenging topic on its own. But again, I do believe that as you unpack that one, sometimes you can see like, oh, I'm desiring this intimacy because I feel lonely, or because I feel like I want someone to validate me, or, you know, what's behind that that is going on, that you can see, oh, like God's provided this for me that can help with those root causes of what's going on. So I think that's a great way to really let that draw of marriage kind of decrease in power, so that you have a healthy view of this is actually why I want to get married, and it's okay that I'm not there, but all these other reasons that I want to get married weren't very valid. And God is loving and providing for me while I'm not married in these things, which makes it so that, you know, maybe you don't make decisions of like, oh, I should just date this person even though it doesn't feel right because I don't want to be single. Like, I think it helps those things lose their power a little bit, which is nice.
Hannah, could you share with our listeners how it came about that you did end up getting married?
Yes.
Because I think that that's an interesting aspect as well of your experience. And I really believe that obviously it was God who, in his perfect timing, brought it about. So could you share some of that with the listeners as well?
Yes, of course. So I was writing the very last chapter of my book, which became the afterword. And when I had just that chapter left, I went to one of my roommate's birthday parties, and one of my friends invited someone who she went to high school with. And because she was out swing dancing with him, he was a big dancer, and was like, oh, Hannah would be great for this guy. So they kindly just invited both of us to the same birthday party. And we met and we talked, and he asked me out. I'm like, no, I'm writing a book on singleness. I like sent him back this long message of like, sorry, I'm writing this book on singleness. Like, I'm not looking for dating, all this stuff, yada, yada, yada. And he was just like, okay, cool. But thankfully, a few weeks later, our mutual friend got married. It was his high school friend married my high school friend, but I was friends with his high school friend. And at that wedding, he asked me to dance, and we danced the whole night and talked. And I was like, okay, maybe God has some other plans than what I think should be happening right now. So we dated, and we dated for a number of years. And in those years is when I got my book published, but it takes a while even from it takes a while to get published, especially me who hadn't been published before, and then a long time from publishing to actually come out and things like that. So in that time we dated, we got engaged, we got married last November, and then my book came out in February. And I was honestly a little conflicted, because I'm like, God, like, this is such weird timing. I was all ready to be like the person on singleness, and I was all ready to try to like uplift people on singleness and be like, I'm doing it, you guys can too, I'm struggling with you. But instead God's like, no, maybe it's time to get married now. So I had a funny time of like talking to everyone who was helping with my book of like, so I'm getting married now, and we're gonna start doing interviews and all these things. But everyone was really encouraging, and I think it was helpful that, you know, like we talked about before we started, that you can be helpful to people in different seasons, even if you're not in those seasons. And I think now being married, I can even validate more that marriage is not going to fix you. It's not going to make every day magical and happy. The stresses and anxieties that I dealt with while I was single are just so much bigger in marriage. And now someone else has to deal with them too, if I don't figure them out. So I think what I've seen is really all that foundational work that I did in singleness, all that growing, all that trust in God has only helped for my marriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether you do that and it helps for a life of singleness or marriage, whatever God has in store, it's so beneficial to do. So I'm very thankful for my journey, but yeah, God's timing has been super funny to me and very surprising to me also. But yeah, I got married and then my book was out on singleness. So I'm still here for everyone.
So I'm so grateful for that aspect, because it also enables me to ask this question as we come towards the end of the program. What are some practical ways that our married friends can come alongside the single girls or guys in their life and had some support?
Yes, I think this is huge, especially in the Christian church. This could be such an encouragement. So thankfully, I had friends model this to me, and this is why I know it, not because I've figured it out myself. I think for me, when I was single, I had different married couples, especially that I met in my church small group, that were so supportive of me. And I think a thing that's very easy to do with single people is just constantly ask them about their relationship status or try to set them up. And every time you see them, just talking about dating and how they're single and things like that. But instead of doing that, these friends would ask me questions like, how'd your presentation go? What are your dreams? What are you working on? What are you excited about? And when we talked, nothing was about me being single unless I brought it up. It was more about who you are as a person, what you're excited about, what you're learning about. And that just made things so much healthier for me and not just thinking of myself as the single person that needs to be fixed. It made me see myself more as, oh, no, there's more to me than my relationship status and what matters there. So I think just very practically, like being a friend that cares about different aspects of life and then checking in, inviting, even just like, hey, you want to come over for dinner because it's Friday night and like we just want to hang out and you can come hang out with our family and like have that, doing things like that. I think there's a lot of unique things that can, you know, be hard for singles. Like I moved and just having a lot of married friends come and help me move was very good because it's like, I can't lift all this stuff on my own. Or for me as a single female, like I wouldn't always go places because I didn't want to drive and walk by myself at night. And like, I didn't feel comfortable. So offering to pick me up, things like that, I think can be really helpful. But I think the most important thing is just caring about where someone is in their life and not emphasizing the fact that they need to be in a relationship, but emphasizing like, God gave you these talents, God has you where you are right now, and how can we best support you so that you can live your best life right now in singleness and not think that you need to be in a relationship to be happy. So just having people with that attitude around me changed the game a lot for me of like, oh yeah, like I am fine, this is okay. So I think that's really helpful.
Hannah, thank you so much for your time. It's really been brilliant. I love how you unpack really practical concepts and give us some steps to deal with the issues in singleness. And then also how you back that up with a lot of truth, which is so important. And it just really sets the heart free from those lies that would keep us back and make singleness some dreadful disease that you have to suffer through. So thank you so much for your time.
Yes. Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I hope that you were encouraged and equipped by our conversation today. Thank you for joining author Hannah Schimmerhorn and myself for Woman Today. For more good news, you can head on over to gncr.org.za. And I am available as Larice Faree on either Facebook or Instagram. So please feel free to reach out to me on either of those platforms. And I will see you again. Thank you so much for your time. Bye.